Broadcasting to New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Sydney, London, and around the world, this is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on this weekend edition of Trumpet Radio Live, 101.3 KPCG. Thanks for joining us on our online stream, kpcg.fm as well, and a live link at thetrumpet.com. Lots to talk about today. The EU and Iran are beginning to clash a little bit. We have some details about that. Taxpayers are fleeing New York. They want to get out of there. And Obamacare, that's always in the news, it seems like. Can it be saved? That's the question. We'll take a look at that and other stories on this weekend edition of Trumpet Radio Live.
This is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here today, this weekend edition of Trumpet Radio Live. Myself, Dwight Falk, and Grant Turgeon with you here today. And we had a really, really good concert the other evening here at Armstrong Auditorium Thursday evening. Step Crew, they were here, and a lot of people came out to that show. Pretty much sold out from what I could tell. And just a tremendous concert, a lot of high energy, a lot of excitement. And they're going to have a video put together of their performance, so that might be out and around somewhere. I don't know exactly how they're going to distribute it, but if you didn't get to go to the actual show, you might get to see it later. And if you did get to go, you might get to see yourself.
Right. They were telling us to applaud and react with 10 times the emotion that we normally would so that they would catch it on the DVD. I just thought they blew us all away last night from the very start. And that was their third time here. They have never really been that effusive in their praise. They were just, they probably spent 10 minutes thanking everybody last night, from their own band members and dancers to obviously the Armstrong staff and then the audience members in Edmonds. So they really, I mean, they were on the verge of tears several times, it seemed like. And then they even spent a lot of time out in the lobby afterwards. So they were pretty happy to be here and pretty sad to leave.
Yeah, so exciting show there. And there are more concerts coming up this year as well. You can check out armstrongauditorium.org and get the full list of upcoming concerts, ticket information, all of those things that you might need. And, of course, we have a lot of listeners around the world at kpcg.fm. So maybe you can't get to all of those. Probably can't, but you never know. You could plan a trip maybe. Come on out. But a lot of the locals are enjoying some of these concerts here, so we had a lot of fun with them. One of the things that was not so fun for you, Grant, is that your beloved Buffalo Bills, they didn't win. It was a close game. They played the Jets, and we have some Jets fans on staff as well. So they're happy, but the Bills fans are sad.
Right, yeah. My father and my brother and I watched the game on recording after the concert, so it was a bit of a late night and not really worth it because of the outcome. Great game, though. I mean, there was a fumble return for a touchdown, probably like, I think, three deep touchdown throws. So pretty good.
I see, you know, it's so funny with the NFL because there's obviously each team has a game a week except for the bye weeks. And so then you have a whole week for them to do nothing but talk about the game that was and then the game coming up. And the headline this morning for the Jets quarterback Fitzpatrick, something about, you know, just like Joe Namath out there. And I'm like, come on, it's just one regular season game. Just take it easy. But you see that they have to make these big, huge, you know, pronouncements about a player or a team. And got to make some headlines, I guess. And I looked at, like, some of the stats. And I thought, that's a pretty good game. I don't know that it was Joe Namath in the Super Bowl or anything. But anyway, they've got to make their headlines, I guess.
I will say he was unbelievable last night. He looked like the greatest quarterback of all time. I mean, it was just crazy. Every third down, he would throw a 30-yard pass. How can we not stop this guy? Actually, he used to be the Bills quarterback, and he was pretty much all offseason holding out for a better contract from the New York Jets.
Yeah.
He got it, and it seems like he's pretty much worth it right now.
Does he still have that giant beard?
Oh, yes. Well, it's not as big, okay. But he lets it grow the whole season, so it will be huge by the end of it.
I don't know. I can't trust a quarterback with a huge beard. I just, for some reason, I just, it just doesn't seem right. Like offensive lineman, that seems right. But a quarterback with a big beard, huge beard like that. He's a Harvard guy, right?
Yes, he is. And yeah. Another thing I like about him is he actually wears his wedding ring while he plays.
Wow.
So he's got the huge beard that pretty much buries his chin strap. And then he has this ring on the whole time he's playing. So he's a pretty unique guy. Very smart.
There's a punter from back in the 80s that played for the Dolphins. And he always wore a watch. He always had a wristwatch. I can't totally remember what his name was, but anyway, if you go back and look him up, he always wore a watch. I don't know if he was like checking his hang time or he was late for a meeting. Or I was like, take the watch off. You're playing football. You know, yeah. That happens. You go out to play a pickup game like a basketball or something. There's always that guy where you're like, hey, can you take off the wristwatch? You know, they're wearing something. They just don't think about it, but it could break or it could break mm-hmm. your face if you get hit with it. So yeah. That happens. But I guess the ring wouldn't be such a big deal for football.
Right. It's on his non-throwing hand, so he's not going to be having a hard throwing motion coming forward and hitting somebody. And even if he does hit someone, he couldn't really hit them in the face because they all have helmets on.
Right. Football players get mad and they start boxing. I never understand that. They're both wearing helmets, but they're boxing each other.
They full swings.
Yeah.
Fist to the helmet.
Yeah.
And they act like it doesn't even hurt.
I don't know. That's interesting. Nevada's trying to get a football team. They want to get the Raiders over there. So this Nevada committee approved a $750 million stadium plan. So in the midst of all of our economic turmoil here in the United States, 100 million unemployed, $750 million stadium plan that they're hoping to go ahead with. So Vegas has not had a professional sports team for pretty obvious reasons, gambling and such. And I think there's also a fear that the players would have a hard time concentrating
right.
because of all the nightlife there in Vegas. But anyway, they're trying to get that going. So who knows? We'll see what happens with the Raiders.
That's interesting because Las Vegas just built that huge T-Mobile arena. So I would have thought that would be sufficient for a football stadium. But maybe they already have so many events there. They have a lot of fights there and things like that. So they couldn't necessarily fill up the football stadium too.
Well, that's – yeah, they have
– or transition between events, I guess.
Yeah, people love going out there for conventions. I was there for a convention one time. There's an older lady sitting next to me. It was in the last session of what we were doing there. And she's like, oh, I'm not going to stay for the afternoon session. I got tickets to Celine Dion. I said, we'll have a good time. So that's why people like to go out there for the various acts and entertainment that happens. So kind of interesting. There's a story last week, or actually I think it was earlier this week, we talked about there's a librarian that saved all of his money up and he had a couple $1 million or something. He gave it all back to the college that he worked at. And the college is taking $1 million of that for a new scoreboard for football. So people are upset because here the penny pinching librarian saves up all this money and gives it to the college and they're like, thanks. And then they build a new $1 million scoreboard, just the scoreboard.
Oh, wow. That just shows you people, when they argue to ban athletics from college, they might have a point because look at all the money that goes into it.
To me, it's not the... Yeah, obviously the sports, it's just the way they're overhyped mm-hmm. and it's so much money and effort put into those, but it's a little out of balance probably. A couple of interesting headlines today. The EU demands Iran disclose details of nuclear parts making. Kind of an awkward headline. But so this is interesting because we always look for the EU and Iran to have more conflict, Germany specifically, but that German-led EU. And it's starting to happen a little bit. You have this nuclear agreement, and the United States definitely is not doing much to prevent anything. You know, there's been stories about loopholes that we've allowed for them to do what they want. Here the EU steps in and says, no, we want you to give us full details of what's going on. So it's going to be interesting to see what Iran, how they respond. I'm sure they're going to say, nah, I don't think so.
At least Europe is treating them the way they should be treated. And saying, well, we actually do want to know the whereabouts of your nuclear materials. We want to know what you're working on. Like you said, America really is like, oh, well, we don't really care too much. We're not even going to really send inspectors in there.
Yeah.
Actually, part of the deal is that they don't really have to have their violations of the deal reported. So
they can
not smart.
Inspect themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy because... I think one of the other things about the way the U.S. is handling nations like Iran is I think it's giving like Iran a false sense of security. Like, oh, everybody, we can say what we want and no one will ever do anything about it because the U.S. doesn't. But some nations will. It says the European Union is demanding that Iran share with the UN Atomic Agency full details of its manufacture of parts for machines that could be used to make the core of nuclear arms in a statement reflecting its concerns over the sensitive issue. The draft statement was seen by the Associated Press on Friday ahead of its planned delivery next week at a board meeting of the UN's International Atomic Energy Agency, and a week after the agency reported that Iran started making rotor tubes for centrifuges in June. It demands, quote, full cooperation of Iran on the issue in talks with the IAEA and calls for updates from the agency to the 35-nation IAEA board. So Iran hasn't shown a willingness to really comply with anybody. So it'll be interesting to see what they do. A little bit of a clash here.
Yes, that's a really good point you made earlier as well about how maybe Iran does have that false sense of security. If America is just letting them do whatever they want, they don't necessarily realize that Europe won't stand for all of this nonsense. So yeah, pretty soon the clash is coming.
This is a story that's sort of related from the Huffington Post, of all places. It says, cash rich and aggressive. And they said this is an interesting paragraph, especially in relation to, obviously, what Iran's doing just with the United States. But when you think about what the current administration has said about how this has been such a great deal and, you know, all this stuff. It says, the Islamic Republic has undeniably become even more aggressive since inking the nuclear accord. In addition to the most recent threats against American surveillance planes, the Islamic Republic has taken American sailors at gunpoint, harassed military ships in international waters, taken American citizens as hostages, fired missiles able to carry nuclear payloads, and broadened its support for the rogue regime of Bashar al-Assad in Syria, as well as Hezbollah and other anti-American forces and terrorist groups in the Middle East. You probably won't hear that said in any of the Democratic speeches leading up to the election. Real quick paragraph here from the Huffington Post, guys. Just bear with me.
No, that's too truthful.
Yeah, I mean, that's what's happened. I mean, and like they say, Iran is now cash rich because we've given them over $1 billion, I guess, and they're aggressive. And this was talking specifically about this incident where we flew some planes in Iran's area, and they said, you better get out of here. We'll blow you out of the sky. So they're not backing off at all.
One article I saw had a picture that went along with it of Secretary of State John Kerry smiling and laughing with one of the hostages that was recently released in that basically ransom. And yes, that's great that he no longer has to be in captivity in Iran. But there's also a way that we could have gotten them back without giving them seven criminals and saying, oh, these 14 people on the watch list, we're no longer going to pursue them, and then giving them $1.7 billion as a ransom payment plus all the interest of over $1 billion in that, and then also releasing $150 in their assets. We've pretty much given them everything. We could have actually gotten those hostages back by just threatening them, basically.
Well, and it's just it's exactly what Bible prophecy says. They're pushy. They have this pushy foreign policy. How far can we push you guys? They're pushing America all the time. They're trying to push us out of the waterways over there, telling us to go back to the Bay of Pigs and all kinds of things. So it's really interesting to see what they're doing and to see Europe step up a little bit and say, you know what, why don't you tell us exactly what you're doing over there? So we'll see what happens. I'm sure they'll come to some sort of an agreement.
Right.
in some fashion. Well, there are, of course, people that need work in the United States, and there is a solution for a few people. This is from countryliving.com. It says, this small town will give land and a job to anyone willing to move. So if you want to go up to Nova Scotia, there might be something for you. Cape Breton, if that's how it's said, I think that's right, is a small island at the eastern end of Nova Scotia. It features all four seasons. The population, as of 2001, is just under 150,000, and the community is true to its small-town roots. The Farmer's Daughter Country Market, a bakery and general store, is a staple of this hidden paradise, and it's looking to expand. They have everything they need except people to work there. After hiring all the qualified locals in need of a job, the business put out a nearly too-good-to-be-true call for help on Facebook. Anyone willing to relocate and meet the needs and qualifications of the store will be offered a job and 2 acres of land to live on. Pretty good deal. However, since the town is not qualified for the foreign worker program, It can only take people who are legally authorized to work in Canada, but anybody can become authorized, a few steps for that. So
Wow.
If you're interested in moving up there to the eastern end of Nova Scotia, getting 2 acres and working at this farmer's daughter country market, there you go.
That's actually something I would take if I didn't love my job so much right now. That's a great deal. And actually, fun fact, one of the step crew members is from Cape Breton.
Oh.
I think they announced it. They introduced him that way last night and said that's where he was from. It's actually amazingly beautiful up there.
Yeah.
So that would be quite the deal.
Yeah, I was looking at some of the pictures of that area online when I was looking at that story, and I thought, yeah, that would be great. I mean, some people probably want more of a city life, and so that wouldn't be for them, I guess. But a beautiful area up there. I've been up to Prince Edward Island, mm-hmm. yeah, sort of in that area, and it was interesting to me because I'm always used to seeing a beach be very populated, and the beaches up there was just like open. There weren't hardly any buildings. It wasn't built up. It wasn't like a big, necessarily touristy thing. It was just open beaches and farmland. And it was so strange to see a farmhouse, a big field, and then, hey, that's the Atlantic Ocean right there. But it was pretty neat. I liked it.
Right, just nature the way it was meant to be and not necessarily taken advantage of for profit.
So if anybody's looking for that job, especially some of our Canadian listeners, you can head over there and work at the grocery store. And they didn't say what they pay. Maybe you don't get paid. Maybe they just give you the 2 acres.
Oh, that's fine. I'll take the 2 acres.
That's something to think about.
Maybe they'll feed their workers, too, from the store.
Yeah, you can. If you want more information about the requirements, you can check out the Farmer's Daughter Country Markets Facebook page. I hope somebody takes that job. I hope somebody listens to this show and takes that job. That'd be great, if it's a good situation, and it looks like it could be.
Maybe that's the next thing I should try for the show, on behalf of this show.
Yeah, we'd send you around to eat the newest fast food creation and to work at various grocery stores.
As well as various movie reviews and such.
Yeah.
That will inevitably come up at some point.
The roving reporter for us. By the way, the other day, I was telling you about that commercial where I think it was Burger King and their chicken fries.
Right.
And yeah. The Cheetos. I saw the second commercial. That's what they're doing. It's the chicken fry wrapped in the Cheeto stuff.
Whoa. Escalating it, huh?
Yeah.
They're finally getting rid of the suspense and telling us what the product is.
That's what it is. Now, I don't know if it's just the cheese powder or if it's the actual like crunchy. That I couldn't determine.
It would be hard to even imagine how they could do that, huh? Put a crunchy outside on the chicken fry.
It'd be interesting to see how that goes. But then they got to wrap it in something. You know, there's something else coming. You know, put it inside of a Twinkie. I don't know. For Thanksgiving.
It's intriguing. I think people are just kind of, there must be some sort of market for weird new products because they're coming out left and right all over the place now. I think it used to be in general, people would say, well, these two things should never be combined. I will never try that. Now it's like, that's actually sounds kind of interesting.
It's all about making getting the stuff into your mouth and body faster. Why waste time with one hand in the Cheeto bowl and one hand in the chicken fry bowl? Let's do it all at one time.
Efficiency. Ruthless efficiency.
And then what I would do is I would actually take that and turn it into a straw. And they could put it in their drink, and then you could drink and then eat the straw.
Wow.
You're doing everything in one motion. It's all about efficiency. They probably run with that idea, actually. Who knows? Here's an interesting story. This is kind of, I guess, ironic from Fox News. Black Lives Matter activist changes tune on police following robbery.
Oh. You know,
they don't like the police until, oh, hey, how come there aren't any police around to protect me? So this has happened here at the University of Houston in that area. University of Houston grad student active in the local Black Lives Matter movement is suddenly all for police patrols, they say, in his neighborhood after he was robbed at gunpoint outside his apartment. The man's name, he's described as one of the leaders of the Black Lives Matter movement on campus. He tells this station that he spotted this young man loitering outside his apartment one evening last week. Didn't think much of it, but when he went to unlock the door, the man pulled the gun on him, stole his wallet and cell phone. So, pretty interesting situation there. He lives, this gentleman lives in an apartment complex just a few blocks from the University of Houston campus in an area that has seen a rise of robberies and thefts in recent weeks, including the burglary of dozens of vehicles. Because the housing is off campus, it is not patrolled by University of Houston police officers. And this guy says that needs to change, this Black Lives Matter activist. He says, I hope they would take a bigger stance and put more security over here because you have a lot of people walking back and forth to class, he told the station. Well, that's convenient. But, you know, I was thinking about this. Okay, think about this situation. This guy is up in his apartment. There's somebody loitering down on the street. They didn't say what his race was, so I don't know what the guy's race is down on the street. But he's loitering down there. And what if an officer were to come up and say, what are you doing here? You know, maybe you should move on. Well, wouldn't he be so quick to turn around and say that's profiling? If you're loitering about, I think they should ask you what you're up to. Because in a lot of cases, they're waiting to rob people.
Mm-hmm.
But what could a police officer do? Because if he went up and said something to him before the robbery, this same guy would probably have been all over him saying you're profiling.
Well, that's the proactive policing that former New York Mayor Rudy Giuliani had proposed and then started to put into practice. If you see someone loitering or you see something that looks suspicious, you investigate it and hopefully prevent crimes. It's kind of like at the airport where we all go through these intensive scans. We don't wait until after someone takes down a plane. We all go through the metal detectors and even sometimes the more invasive, I guess, techniques that they use.
Yeah.
So the police should be authorized to do the exact same thing where you need to be able to prevent some of these things by checking out certain situations and certain people who look like maybe are up to no good.
In the story here on Fox News, they also embedded a video of those protesters yelling that they wanted dead cops. So, but now after they need them, now, you know, this activist, he kind of seems like he's mad at the police. Like, well, they should be here patrolling. Like, it's their fault. Well, apparently they don't patrol that area because it's not in their jurisdiction, I guess, from what I could tell. But, you know, they can't win. They're just in a no-win situation, those officers, because as soon as one little thing happens, they're all over them. But then as soon as they don't step in and do something, they're all over them. Can't win. It's a hard job.
Maybe all these protesters should just back off and trust that their 4 to 6 months of intense training possibly taught the police how to do their jobs, and they don't need to have some protesters thinking that they know better.
Yeah, so pretty interesting, just ironic, and I think we'll probably see more of those types of stories come out. And again, you know, then I know they backtrack real quick and they say, well, I'm not against police, I'm just against corrupt police. Well, okay.
Well, which ones? That's the thing.
Right. I'm not against the one that was going to help me here, but the other one.
Assuming he was even up and up in the first place.
Yeah, who knows? This is here's a interesting write-up from Politico. Obama steps in to save Obamacare. Sounds like there should be like some superhero music that plays with that headline. quite a long write-up about it, but one part I thought was kind of interesting, one little paragraph. It says, but 6 years after passage of Obama's signature domestic achievement, the litany of woes afflicting the Obamacare marketplaces is formidable. Enrollment has plateaued at half of what was projected. Three major insurers have largely quit, citing big losses. Double-digit rate hikes are the norm for plans across the country, and roughly 1 in 5 Americans may find just one insurer selling plans in their area when they shop for it in 2017. So the article talks a lot about, well, they try to give some what they perceive as good news about Obamacare, that more people are insured, and they throw out some numbers. But I thought this was the only paragraph that really mattered, because this is actually what's happening. I mean, just take a look at some of those things that they're talking about. I mean, enrollment has plateaued at half of what was projected. Now, remember, when they pushed this through, it was on numbers of projections, and those are not right. And then a lot of insurers have quit. They said three major ones, big losses, double-digit rate hikes. So if you can afford that.
Well, yeah, you even mentioned, I believe you said 1 in 5 who would only have one insurer to choose from in
That's
their
right.
area.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean if you think about it economically? Obviously, the one option is going to charge way too much money because there's no competition.
Yep.
So this has just been a horrible thing for most people. For the very poor who would not have any sort of coverage at all, maybe it does help. But for most people, it is a huge burden.
And for those that are getting it, well, at a very discounted rate or free, I mean, it's just a social program.
Mm-hmm.
But you have 100 million people unemployed that aren't paying into it, at least. So again, you run out of money at some point.
Yeah, we can't all just be expected to pay for everyone else. It's just that's not fair. We try to say that everyone having the same things is fair, but what about the people who pay 100 times more than others?
Yeah, it's just probably it's just heading to socialized medicine, which is a goal at the end. This I think it's just kind of the middleman, the poor middleman, the Obamacare middleman.
We should have known at the very start when the enrollment website crashed 1,000 times that maybe this whole thing was a bad idea.
Yeah, and it is, like they said, it's very expensive, and everybody knows. I mean, if you've looked at the plans, as I've had to, and you're like, now wait, now I pay how much and for what? And then there's a $5,000 deductible. It's not all it's cracked up to be. So anyway, kind of interesting. They'll see what happens there. That's one of his big legacy moves that he's pushing for, I guess. So we'll see what happens. The government employees, they don't have to have that, right? That's one of the parts of the deal. They didn't need it. they could keep their nice plans that they like.
And the lawmakers wouldn't let us read the bill beforehand either. So
you know, reading this article, they threw out so many like just general comments like, well, progress isn't easy, but, you know, it takes time. And, of course, the important word there is progress. I'm like, well, it's not necessarily progress. I mean, it also takes time for things to be destroyed.
Yeah.
You know, just these real general platitudes and no facts. I mean, if it was such a great plan, boy, people, you wouldn't have to sell it. People would be on board. You know, you don't see people out there trying to convince anybody to go buy like Air Jordans, right? I mean, they do have advertising, but it's not like people like them because they have a reputation for being an item people want, and or an iPhone. I mean, they work pretty well. That's why people go get them. So you don't have to like keep convincing people. You know, like I know your phone bursts into flames, but stick with us here. You know, if it works, people will go get it. If they want it, they'll go get it. If they don't, they won't. That's supposed to be the way it's set up.
Yeah, the whole point of a marketplace is to buy products because they're actually useful and beneficial and worthwhile, not because you feel pity on the person who is selling to you and you feel like you need to support them even through all of the terrible mistakes that might be made.
And there were plenty of programs set up to help people, you know, before this healthcare revolution. There would be examples all the time of people coming to the United States to get medical care because it was better than what was in their country. So anyway, it's an unfolding situation there. My Air Jordan example probably wasn't the best. It's a very high-priced tennis shoe, but they're quality. I mean, they make them nice.
Look how popular they are. And the great Russell Westbrook is an advocate.
Yes, he is. So that's another reason to support those shoes, I guess. But the point being is that if it's a quality product, it lasts, people like it, you know, they go after it. They'll go get it. And then typically, you know, with whatever their price range is, usually there's different levels of what you can get depending on your price range. And the healthcare thing is not exactly that because it's pretty expensive. And if you don't get it, then you've got to pay the fine, which the fine can be more expensive too. So they're going to get you one way or the other.
Yeah, it's tough. And it just makes you wonder why are they forcing people into this one option? And why is there an astronomical fine if you don't get into it? It really is. It seems like just a money-making scheme to me.
And, well, it's control as well to take over.
Yeah, power.
Just the control of those different markets. A couple of stories here from the Of Course This Happened segment. 18-year-old sues parents over the childhood photos they posted to Facebook. 18-year-old woman says that her parents, since 2009, have posted some 500 photos of her all the way back to when she was a baby. And she doesn't want them on Facebook, so she's suing her parents to have them taken down. Then they made like a family photo album of her when she was a baby and all of her embarrassing pictures over the years, and she doesn't want them up there. So there's a lawsuit. We'll see what happens.
Well, she's 18 years old now. She's saying, I'm no longer a minor. You can't treat me this way. I'm a grown woman.
That's right. The dad says friends like the photos, and he told the local magazine Deutsche Welle, I guess in Germany there, he says, it's a nice family album that's been well received by our Facebook friends. He maintains that he has the right to publish the images because he took them. The daughter's response, they know no shame, she says. Every stage was photographed and then made public. The family is set to appear in court in November in the first case of its kind. Okay, this is in Austria, so it's in Austria. And so it's interesting because it gets down to what are the rights of people. Can you post that stuff? Can you not? If it's your image? So it's an interesting case.
It is. I would tend to favor the parents because they raised that child. And so they might have a little bit of a right to publicly embarrass you from time to time.
Who knows? It's interesting. So they say it's a reminder that laws governing social media are incomplete and constantly evolving. There's always questions of who owns that type of material. So anyway, kind of interesting to see what happens there. One other story here, the iPhone 7 is, of course, I guess, coming out, or it has come out. I can't remember which. iPhone 7 delays on UK launch day spark Twitter fury, as some told phones won't be delivered until October. So they were expecting the phone to be delivered the next day, and then they all got an email or a text that night from Apple saying, it won't be here for a while. That made people angry.
This has been quite a contentious product, too, because I guess a lot of people were upset that they got rid of the headphone jack,
yeah,
the little plug-in.
Right.
And apparently maybe they're trying to put some wireless technology that you could just plug right into your ear.
Yeah, they're always, sometimes it seems like it's just change for the sake of change. You think, well, what was wrong with the headphones? Seemed like they worked okay. But in any event, there's a couple of tweets. Some people were really angry. This one was kind of funny, though. The guy says, the irony of listening to Stevie Wonder's Signed, Sealed, Delivered while on hold to speak to the to Apple about my iPhone order delay.
Perfect song.
Perfect song, just to rub salt in the wound. Signed, sealed, and delivered. Yeah, there's going to be a delay on that phone.
None of those three.
Yeah, maybe that's what they were doing. None of these three. But again, they, you know, people want their phone, so whether they have to wait or not, I guess they're going to. The thing that's funny, too, is that, where are they tweeting from? They're tweeting from their phone. They have one. It's just not the new one.
Just not the very latest cutting-edge version. The reason that they have to keep coming out with these new ones every, what is it, like half year or year, is because there's competitors. Think about if there weren't any Android phones anywhere, we'd still be back on those gigantic gray ones that are like a foot long.
You know, I have an iPhone, but it is, boy, it's got to be like three generations behind now. It still works fine.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I guess if you're getting new apps and things, sometimes the iOSs don't match up, but I'm not getting the latest, you know, video game or whatever is out there. So for me, it doesn't matter. No. It's kind of a status thing, I guess. You know, they always talk about shaming people. I wonder if there's phone shame. Can be phone shamed?
There is. I've seen it a lot, especially at public school. They say, what? That phone was so 3 months ago.
Right.
I saw another kid, not really related, but he said, oh, you only have $2 in your wallet? How dare you? It's like, oh, you're just a typical rich kid, huh?
Money shaming, phone shaming.
There's a type of shaming probably for every category.
Shame shaming. How can you shame everyone? You should be ashamed of yourself. We were at one of the stores the other day, and my daughter was with me, and they had the toy section. They had an old phone, like a rotary dial. She had, you know, she's like, what is that thing? I'm like, that's a phone. We used to have one like that. We actually did. We had the old rotary dial.
I could never really figure out how to use those. I had a hard time figuring out which way to go to get the new number in there.
Yeah, calling was, it was a little more of an adventure back then. Instead of just saying the person's name or whatever, mm-hmm, you had to do. So some of the things that are happening out there in the world today. There's a brand new Key of David program coming up this weekend on KPCG. The title is Who is the End Time Elijah? And it'll be on television as well, or you can watch the video online at thetrumpet.com. Jesus Christ said that he would send a man who would come in the end time to prepare the way for his second coming. This man has already come, just as Christ said he would. Of course, the question is, do people identify that individual? So you can see that, more about that topic here on this new Key of David, Who is the End Time Elijah? There's three free booklets being offered, Malachi's Message, the Epistle of James, and the Former Prophets, How to Become a King. You can get all that literature for free. That's at thetrumpet.com as well. Make sure you listen for that program here over the weekend. It's a good one. Make sure you watch it or listen to it or both.
Binge listen, too.
You can binge listen.
It's the weekend. That's what we always have to do, is binge listen to KPCG.
People always complain about the announcers on football games. Turn down the volume. Turn on some of the KPCG programs. You can watch the game. You can listen to the programs.
Oh, that is brilliant. I never even thought of that before.
It's perfect. You can get the archives at kpcg.fm. That way you don't have to listen to Chris Collinsworth anymore.
Actually, I've heard so many people say that he's like the best. So I guess it just varies.
It does. I don't have a problem with him. The other day I happened to be watching a game, and this one guy just couldn't stop talking about Chris Collinsworth. Like everything he said, he was like, can't stand this Chris Collinsworth. I don't think there's one guy out there that everybody likes.
Right.
I think everyone has a very strong opinion about some announcers they like and some they don't. I always liked John Madden. I thought he was good.
He was.
He never said anything too specific or too scientific. It was just, he'd always say, like, oh, just get in there and you boom them and you pop them and you wham them. And, you know, that was, but that's what you do. You get in there, push the other guy over. So
doesn't that appeal to more people than trying to get all technical?
Yeah.
Most people watching are probably not big time football fans. The Madden video game was named after him. You don't have video games named after other announcers.
Yeah, I always liked him. I thought he was pretty good. And he never flew. He always took a bus.
He was terrified of flying.
Yeah, so he drove to all the games. So that was kind of interesting to see that. Trumpet Daily Radio Show with your host Stephen Fleury from Edstone, England. He talked about a couple of events that sort of under the radar, I guess, but they highlight bigger trends. U.S. diplomats came under attack in South Sudan. This wasn't too long ago, I guess. Anti-Americanism is growing there, a small example of the hatred and lack of fear foreign nations have toward the U.S. The U.S. government said the incident was a mistake. So there's a few like those where they clearly came under fire because they were Americans. And then we come out and say, oh, it was a mistake. It was just an accident. And they're just pushing us around. South Sudan?
Who are they?
Come on now.
Come on. Haven't they only existed for a couple years?
But again, it highlights that bigger trend. He has a couple of other examples as well where we just don't do anything. You know, and the Philippine president, of course, and even over the last few days, have had those protests where they're protesting. They want the troops out. You know, so it's, anyway, the U.S. is not being respected around the world and not being feared either. And once people don't respect you and fear you as a world power, what does that make you? Not a world power.
Not a world power, exactly.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting, too, because I was thinking during the Trumpet Daily Radio Show just about Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. You know, and here's two people that want to be the president, and there's a lot of prestige with being president, but that office has lost a lot of prestige over the last couple of terms, especially. And, you know, sometimes people talk about somebody kind of living in their own bubble. You know, they're in their own bubble. They don't really pay attention to what's going on around them. That's kind of what's happening here. You know, the media is all about who's going to be president. And the rest of the world's like, we don't care because we're just going to push you around. It's like trying to win like the starting quarterback on the worst team. You know, hey, great, but nobody cares.
You're going to have one win the whole season.
You're still the worst team out there, right? So it's kind of what's happening in some ways. So it's a really interesting Trumpet Daily Radio Show. And again, those attacks in South Sudan, I think two Americans were kidnapped in Afghanistan. I mean, there's things going on. You just don't hear a lot about them. So it's important to get some of those stories. And again, there's smaller numbers of individuals involved, but it does highlight the bigger trend. So make sure you listen for that over the weekend here on KPCG. Also, the Trumpet Hour Week in Review program will be on this weekend as well, so a lot to listen to there. Grant, you've got an interesting story for us here from the New York Post. Wasn't there a movie years ago called Fleeing New York or Escape to New York or From New York or something?
Probably.
Yeah.
An interesting movie, at least.
Yeah, there was like they turned Manhattan into a prison or something. And
wow.
Anyway. I don't think it was a good one, and I've never really seen it, but I was somewhat. I remember that title. Should have never brought it up because we don't know
the
title.
Maybe that can be my project over the weekend on top of binge listening.
To find out about that movie.
Possibly going to the state fair.
This kind of ties in this headline with that, idea. Taxpayers are fleeing New York in droves. So people are trying to escape New York and are doing it, these taxpayers. And that's never a good thing for a city. What's the deal with that?
Well, New York was actually recently reported as the least free state in the entire country. And now people are saying, well, it could be because they're paying way more in taxes than everybody else. In 2014, 126,000 New York taxpayers fled to other places in the United States. So they're not saying we hate America and we're leaving. They're saying specifically New York isn't fulfilling our desires, and so we're going to leave this state. So it might be just speculation, but a lot of the high earners, those who earn more than $200,000 a year, are the ones who are leaving. Not just your regular taxpayers, but the ones who get taxed proportionately way higher than they should.
Yeah, and that happened in Chicago recently. We had talked about that too, where, you know, what would anybody do? I mean, if you're making a certain income and they're just really hitting you with taxes, if you could move and save more of that, I mean, anybody would.
Mm-hmm.
And from what I could read in that article, too, Donald Trump really came out against Hillary Clinton over this because, she promised to bring a bunch of jobs and so forth to New York, but the results haven't been great.
Right. Donald Trump described parts of New York as death zones because all the jobs are dying, all the places are dying. Buffalo is actually a good example. It was a former thriving industrial city, and now you see just so many empty factories there. And I believe Donald Trump has mentioned that before. But yeah, a lot of these people are being taxed too much. And New York has actually been leading the nation in domestic migration for decades, meaning people who leave the state, not people who come to the state. At the same time, New York's population is actually rising because of immigration. You could read that as low income, low earners, or even people who are on government benefits coming into the state, which would then require more taxes on the rich to pay for those who aren't contributing to the system.
Yeah. So in a lot of ways, if you look at those trends, it's becoming sort of, well, you could say a third worldish type of situation. Not that it's there at this point, but it could become that. Certainly certain sectors could become that because you can't just or like, I guess, a refugee center. Right. I mean, you do need to have some inflow of money to keep all the social programs going that they want. But if people are leaving and taking their money elsewhere, what are you left with? Lots of people that aren't producing. At least they're not producing much.
Yeah, it's killing good business and a solid economy. Illinois was actually, you mentioned, they were the second largest number of people to go to other states in 2014 with 82,000, and then California with 57,900 residents leaving the state. And you know where they went? Texas, Florida, and South Carolina, much more conservative Republican states who favor smaller government and lower taxes.
Yeah, I was going to guess Texas for sure.
Yeah.
But yeah, even you hear about that sometimes with athletes when they're thinking about where to go and play a professional sport because they do make obviously quite a bit of money. And a lot of times what factors in is, oh, I don't have to pay so much tax if I go for this particular spot.
Mm-hmm.
It's a selling point. I mean, there is that idea that's been kind of popular that there's this elite 1% with all the money and they're just, you know, hurting everybody else. But I mean, if you're up in a higher income bracket, certainly 200,000 is not 1%. But if you're up there in a higher income bracket, you know, at some point you got to say, come on now, I can't be paying for everybody to do everything else. It'd be far better off if these are people that own businesses, which they probably are, lower the taxes so they can hire more people, I would think.
Yeah.
And it seems like that's worked over you know, historical. If you look back at, like, say, Coolidge and people like that, that's kind of what they did.
That is really simple economics. So you just kind of have to wonder, why is one side pushing to alienate the rich as much as they are? A lot of it, I think, has to do with votes. There are so many poor who think that if you just punish the rich, then you're the good guys. And I think it is just a vote grab in a lot of ways. It even goes into specifics here about how much more exactly New Yorkers are paying. Overall, they're paying 29% more than the average state in the U.S. For childcare, they're paying 90% more than other states, which is nearly twice as much. In taxes in general, they're paying 69% more. Housing, they're paying 22% more. Other necessities, 12% more. Healthcare, 6% more. Food is exactly the same. And transportation, not surprisingly, is a little bit less, 4% less because of, obviously, cheap subway fares and things like that in the big cities instead of having a car.
Yeah. The downside being you have to ride a subway.
Yes. So. And some of the insane things that go on there.
Yeah. It's cheaper, but yeah, you have to ride in a subway as well. There is two sides to that coin, I guess. Well, it's interesting to see what will happen in New York. New York's a really interesting kind of a case study because they've had their ups and downs over the years. And when Mayor Giuliani was there, the crime was less. Now we've seen it become increased. You know, economically, they were thriving to some extent for maybe a little while there, probably with Giuliani as well. And now it's going the other direction more. So, again, they've had their ups and downs. But a lot of it, dude, does have to just do with crime and all of those things. You know, you're not going to want to have a business in an area where there's high crime,
mm-hmm.
where there's not a lot of officers patrolling. And then obviously, like this says, if they're taxing you like crazy, you gotta get out of there because you just can't afford it after a while. And that's just a reality. You just can't afford it after a while.
That's right. There's a lot of deception in some of these terms as well, because the poverty rate itself has actually stayed the same for decades, maybe around 50 years, but the income inequality gap has gotten larger. But what that really means is that everyone's making more, but the rich are making so much more. But in general, the poor are making more than they used to, even. So it's basically, if the poor are down here at the basement level, now they're up maybe to the middle level at, compared to before, and the rich are just basically through the ceiling. Everyone's doing better, but the gap is just larger between the rich and the poor than it used to be. We have to remember that the rich do provide jobs for a lot of people. There are a few who get their money in corrupt ways, but in general, to have war against the rich is really running contrary to the American dream of getting a good job, being self-sufficient, making a success of yourself, starting from the bottom and climbing to the top.
Yeah, really interesting to see what's happening out there in New York. And that was the name of the movie, by the way, Escape from New York.
Escape from New York.
I checked it. I was correct. And I don't think it's a good one. I'm not recommending it. I'm just saying. It's interesting because people now actually are escaping from New York, so because of the high taxes and some other cities, too, like Chicago, like we've seen. So those cities, well, in Detroit, of course, has been an example, too, of just cities in decay.
Yeah.
And so there was a story the other day. I didn't read all the details, but a lot of the U.S. cities are falling off of the top city lists for the world. Mm-hmm. Other nations are rising. So it's kind of one of those ongoing trends. Here's an interesting story, too, to finish up today. This is from Der Spiegel. Clinging to power, the Merkel era coming to an end, question mark. So we've been obviously looking at this for a long time at thetrumpet.com. And she's come under a lot of fire lately because of the immigration policies in particular. It says, well, this is a really long article, actually. It's about, I think, four pages. Pretty well written. If you got a chance to check it out, it would be a good one. But just a couple of highlights here. It says, just 1 year ago, Merkel was more popular than almost any chancellor who had come before, with her prudent foreign policy being a significant reason why. But then came the refugee crisis, and with it, the accusation that Merkel was pursuing a kind of moral imperialism in Europe. Her partners in the EU abandoned her while back home. The AfD, a party she thought she had already defeated, began gaining support in Mecklenburg-Western Pomerania. The AfD on Sunday even won more votes than the CDU, the first time in German post-war history that a right-wing populist party attracted more votes than the center-right. So that's a pretty important line there. The first time in German post-war history that a right-wing populist party attracted more votes than the center-right, and probably all in response to the immigration crisis.
Mm-hmm.
So they're highlighting the fact that she is on shaky ground here. And they're talking about what you can expect to see with her in the future. They say, are we witnessing the end of the Merkel era? Merkel appears to be determined to run once again for re-election, but among German conservatives, rather, doubts are growing as to whether that is really a good idea. There hasn't as yet been an open revolt, but within the chancellery, a combination of defiance and paranoia is spreading, a development that is reminiscent of the final days of former Chancellor Helmut Kohl's 16-year reign. So it's going to be interesting to watch between now and the election there in Germany to see if she runs and if she has support and just what happens.
She's really just a kind of a good weather politician who does her best work in good times. But right now, Germany is facing problems like never before, or pretty much like never before. They're facing similar problems that have led them to some extreme actions in the past. And they can't really afford to have someone who doesn't face reality and deal with these issues.
Yeah, they need a solution. They say, Is it even still possible for Merkel to stop the erosion of her power? Many of her predecessors in the chancellery were prepared to risk their office to defend their convictions. Helmut Schmidt pushed through the stationing of mid-range nuclear missiles in West Germany against significant opposition from the SPD party. Gerhard Schroeder, likewise of the SPD, did the same with his deep welfare cuts. In that regard, there was an element of heroism in Merkel's decision on the night of September 4th, 2015, to open Germany's borders to refugees trapped in Hungary. Notorious for her hesitancy, Merkel finally seemed prepared to spend the political capital she had amassed over the years to stand up for her convictions. It was a courageous move and one that garnered her respect the world over for a time, they say, but in the ensuing weeks and months, she was unable to find a way to impose order on the flood of refugees coming into the country. So that's an interesting line there. You know, she was unable to find a way to impose order. You have to impose it. And you can't have this sort of, you know, we respect your cultures to the point that you can do what you want. At some point, you have to impose order. I thought that was an interesting line.
Yes, and some of the things that she's done with these migrants, actually, it borders on the definition of genocide for her own people, where her own people are being discomfited by the migrants coming in. The migrants are actually displacing some of the Germans, and they're causing strife in their own country. And I mean, how long before the Muslims just develop strongholds there when this is supposed to be a Western European nation? You can't just bring in people who are hostile to your people's way of life and then still have a claim as a leader like she did last year.
Yeah, and that's the difficulty that they're in over there, is that they do have to impose order, but the refugees say, you're imposing on my religious beliefs, right? So it comes down to a battle of will and power and might. Somebody's got to rule and somebody's got to be ruled. Mm. And right now they're kind of playing that awkward game of, you know, looking at each other. Who's going to rule here? And, of course, the German people are not going to want to give up their country, understandably. It says the country seems paralyzed. In Merkel's eyes, her refugee policy has become core to her term in the chancellery. It marks a moment when she didn't allow herself to be guided by tactical political considerations. That, though, implies limits to her current room for maneuver, because if she were to admit that she made mistakes, it would be akin to self-betrayal. That, at least, is how she sees it, they say. And that's what makes the current impasse so hopeless. So she doesn't want to admit that she made a mistake. And then even if she admits she made a mistake, then you have to fix it. How do you fix it? You know what I mean? Like we've talked about before, are you going to round everybody up and send them out? I mean, the world would boo and hiss, and she's in a no-win spot, I think.
Yeah, and like you said, she disregarded kind of the tactical and strategic implications of bringing in all these migrants. Why would you ever, as the leader of a country, disregard those important parts of it and basically act on your emotions and how you feel? That's not practical. It's actually very dangerous, and we see a lot of the same things happening here.
Yeah, I mean, imagine if she had just said, we don't have any room, we can't take them, and just kept the borders sealed. You know, people might have been upset initially, but they would have moved on, and they would have seen these refugees spill into all these other nations and cause problems, and she would have been even a bigger hero.
Mm-hmm.
But because she opened the borders up, now she's in this spot. Finally, this last little bit's really, really interesting, and it ties into what's talked about at the trumpet for a long time. It says, Merkel can agree with Helmut Kohl. In the late stages of his time in office, as his popularity continued to wane, he would often ask his visitors this one question. Well, who else can do this job? And that's really where she sits. That's kind of her only hope right now. Well, who else can do it? Ah, but maybe there is somebody else who can do it. And that really, I think her power hinges on the answer to that one question. If somebody else can do the job, then I don't think she'll be there to do it anymore. But they're still looking for that person to step up.
It really just takes someone who is less concerned about international opinion, someone who will take the hard steps of fixing a problem that has become entrenched in their country. And we know from Bible prophecy that there is a man coming who will do that, who won't be afraid of outcry based on what he does.
And is going to have room to work because there's such a backlash against the immigration now. If that hadn't happened, people would be a lot more, they wouldn't be as right wing.
Yeah.
They would be much more, post-war, you know, the more postmodern sort of Germany wanting to, you know, not get into all of that. But once once you're dealing with this these attacks and that type of thing, and somebody comes in and says, I'm going to fix it, people rally behind that pretty quickly. Whereas before, you know, that happened, that immigration problem happened, people wouldn't have been quite as excited about a leader like that. It'd be too authoritarian.
Mm-hmm.
Until you have a problem, and then you need somebody that's authoritarian, and so that's the position Germany's in today.
It's baffling why so many of these Western nations have to wait until times of crisis to get these stronger leaders in place. Not necessarily even leaders who will abuse power, but just those who will prioritize protecting the people instead of enacting these illogical policies. When things get serious enough, you want a leader who will actually stand up for the people. But we seem to be pushed to the brink of disaster before we ever elect those type of candidates in Britain and in America, in Germany right now.
Yeah, interesting write-up here. Der Spiegel, clinging to power, the Merkel era coming to an end, question. Pretty interesting write-up. If you've got some time, it's not a bad one. I think it's about a four-pager, which in this day and age seems like War and Peace. But but if you can make it through there, there's some really interesting insights. Those are just some of the highlights. Also, of course, the Trumpet Hour Week in Review program coming up this weekend. Make sure you listen for that. Brand new Key of David program as well. Definitely must see that and listen to that one also. And the Trumpet Daily Radio Show with your host, Stephen Fleury. He also goes through and empties out the mailbag. So lots of different comments coming in. And then he wants people to email again. Go ahead, email. You can email us, too. Comments at kpcg.fm. We're happy to hear those. And you can follow us on Twitter at kpcgfm. That'll do it for us on this weekend edition of Trumpet Radio Live. Thanks for joining us. Myself, Dwight Falk, and Grant Turgeon, have a great rest of your weekend, and we'll see you back here on Monday.
Listening to Trumpet Radio 101.3 KPCG. You can download Trumpet Radio live segments from kpcg.fm.